Shopify is a global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. And sell more with less effort thanks to the Shopify magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/redcircle, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/redcircle now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/redcircle.
This is the Adam Carriker Show. On 93.7 The Ticket and theticketfm.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to the Adam Carriker Show here on 93.7 The Ticket. Jake, we are on time. Like, exactly on. That never happens. That is amazing. All right. Your daily friendly reminder, if you're so inclined and are interested, you can learn more or register at CarrickerChronicles.com for the inaugural Carricker Chronicles football camp. The camp that is for the kids, featuring Eric Crouch, Amon Green, Zach Wigert, Kenny Wilhite, and yours truly here in Lincoln, Nebraska, at the LYF Lincoln Youth Football Field for kindergarten through eighth graders, boys and girls, t-shirts included, autographs included. Come learn the basics and fundamentals and or take your game to the next level. There's nobody better to learn it from than the guys I just previously mentioned. July 9th, 9 a.m. to 1 p.m. here in Lincoln, Nebraska. Again, the inaugural Carricker Chronicles football camp. Learn more and or register. Tell a friend. Go to CarrickerChronicles.com. As you probably heard by now, Warren Buffett is stepping down as CEO of Berkshire this year. At Huskies on Twitter said, "I'm still holding out hope that he donates just 1% of his fortune, about $1.6 billion. I'll trust his math on this one, to his alma mater's football program, and we will never lose again." Is this the answer to our woes? Is that all that needs to happen, Jake? Would we win every – would Joey Harrington next year be talking about, oh, there's not – 10 to 12 to 16 teams. There's one. It's Nebraska. They're going to win it all. Is this all we need to solve our woes?
It could be, but good luck. It's a problem or a solution. We've not found a solution for, and Warren Buffett has been rich for a long time. So I know Nebraska, has probably tried knocking on his door a few times. It just has never really gotten too much of a response.
He is very, what I know about him, very, very frugal. Like, he doesn't waste money. Doesn't spend a ton of it. There's things I don't know what all he'd be comfortable with me sharing. The one thing I will share is the first time I ever met him. I mean, this was like, I don't know, 10, 15 years ago. His pants were exponentially too short. Like, you remember Steve Urkel? Like, not the whole ensemble, but just like the pants were exponentially too short. And I'm like, this dude could buy 1 billion of these pants, but he don't care. And so it's funny, I actually liked him more after that. Mm-hmm. Like, he's not interested in those types of deals. He's just a real raw person who obviously has had a whole ton of success. All right, I've seen a couple of these, the preseason and or postseason Big Ten coaching rankings, and it goes Ryan Day number one, which I love, with all the heat that he has just accumulated over the years. You know, born on third, didn't actually do anything, can't win the big one, wins the national title, now he's the best coach in the Big Ten. Funny how that works. All right, Ryan Day number one. James Franklin number two. I don't have an issue with either one of them. All right. Number three, Kirk Ferentz. I thought that was interesting. All right. Had a lot of sustained success at Iowa. Tends to do more with less, get the most out of his players of just about any program in the country. I respect all of that. Dan Lanning at Oregon. Don't have an issue with that. Here, I thought it got interesting, though. You know, right around this part, and this isn't a shot at Matt Rhule. He's fifth on this list, but it was interesting to me because he's ahead of Kurt Cignetti, and we know what Cignetti did in 1 year at Indiana. All right, and obviously we did not win in Indiana a year ago. So is it because he's been in the Big Ten 2 years? Kurt's been in the Big Ten one. I was kind of intrigued by that. Matt Rhule was fifth. Kurt Cignetti was sixth. P.J. Fleck was seventh. Brett Bielema is eighth. Lincoln Riley ninth. Greg Schiano 10th. And then Luke Fickell was 11th. Jonathan Smith, who I do think is going to climb this list. He's only been there going on year two now at Michigan State. He's a very good football coach. You keep going down the list, Barry Odom at Purdue, Sharon Moore at Michigan. I thought this was way too low in my humble opinion. All right, number 15, Jed Fish at Washington, Mike Loxley at Maryland, Deshaun Foster at UCLA. I actually thought Deshaun did a decent job last year, especially in the back half of the year at UCLA, David Braun at Northwestern. But what was your reaction? Let's say to the top five, Ryan Day, number one, Franklin, number two, Ferentz, number three, Lanning, number four, Rhule, number five. If you go to the top seven, Cignetti, number six, P.J. Fleck, number seven. What's kind of your reaction? Brett Bielema, number eight. All right, your top eight. Would you jumble those at all? Would you change those at all? Were you surprised by any of those, Jake?
I was surprised to see Coach Rhule as high as he was. And again, it's not a shot at Coach Rhule. It's just the level of, you know, coaching in this conference is pretty high. I will still clap back at Ryan Day. He was born on third. I think all these coaches under him would love to have inherited the Urban Meyer job Ohio State. Not to say that he hasn't done a good job there. But then also, you know how my feelings about two-loss champion, first time they would have ever been able to win in any playoff format this past year anyway. So I might take Dan Lanning over Ryan Day if you just give it to me, you know, if I had to start a program.
So, okay, your top five then. Because Dan Lanning's a fourth, you're saying you might put him at number one. What would be your top five then?
Well, I'm not saying Ryan Day, I think it's funny because he goes from, well, he might get fired to, well, now he's the best coach in the Big Ten.
Yep, funny how that
and
works.
And so I'm just not sure. just not sure that you could do that quickly. You have to massively respect what he's been able to do there. Even inheriting a great program. So I don't have a problem with it necessarily. My thing would just be that Nebraska and Coach Matt Rhule, it's hard to tell because these lists sometimes are like, what have you done for me lately? And Matt Rhule's spot's just kind of weird because he's kind of in the middle of, he had some success previously, hasn't done a whole lot at Nebraska, did kind of move the needle. So it just kind of felt like I don't know where they're judging it. I'm always shocked that Brett Bielema is as far back as he is on these lists. Mm-hmm. And I think it's because you're kind of looking at recent success. He's a three-time Big Ten champion at Wisconsin and now has Illinois in a top 15 finish. What's he doing at eighth? So yep. I would put, you know, Rhule behind him. I'd kind of more put him into the PJ Flex, the Greg Schiano's of the world, which again, that's not disrespect. Those are two really damn good coaches.
Tyrone Moore at 14. I'm going to give my thoughts here. I feel like I was with you. I was like, why is Brett Bielema not higher? Three-time Big Ten champion. Obviously, he was at Wisconsin before, a lot of success there. They finished top five, top 10 a lot under his regime, probably more under his regime than they have since his regime, with all due respect to everyone who's coached there since. I think he should be higher. I think Sherrone Moore at 14 is crazy. Like, he's got a heck of a job to do there at Michigan this year. All right. And I've started to do a breakdown of each team in the Big Ten. Did you know that Illinois was 5-1 in one score games last year? I wonder if people are like, they can't do that again. And they're kind of almost holding it against them. Although they have 70% of their returning production coming back, which is more than just about any other, like Oregon has less than 50, Ohio State has less than 50. All right, defensively, Nebraska lost 70% of their production from a year ago, right? We brought in new guys, excited to see what they can do. But as far as teams with actual returning production, there's not a lot in America. There just isn't. Illinois got some of the most in the entire Big Ten Conference. Michigan lost their top six tacklers from a year ago. USC lost their top five pass catchers from a year ago. Just think about these things. All right. When it comes to Sherrone Moore, he's got quite the job in front of him as well. True freshman quarterback, as I mentioned, lost their top six tacklers. Whole bunch of question marks there. They're still supposed to be pretty good, mostly because they're Michigan, and we just kind of anticipate the Michigan's going to Michigan, and they're going to Michigan teams and win somehow. All right, but being a 14, I thought was crazy to me. I think Brett Bielema should be higher. When it comes to Ryan Day at number one, I was like, all right, because immediately I was like, oh, they were talking about firing him not long ago. Wins the title. Now he's number one. I had the same reaction you did. But I was like, who would I put there instead? I think James Franklin is a heck of a coach, but I wouldn't put him number one. And I was like, Kirk Ferentz does a great job, not number one. Dan Lanning, I don't have a problem if you want to put him 2-4. I was like, who else would you put one? I don't know who else you would put at number one. You said Dan Lanning possibly. When it comes to Rhule, I think a lot of this is projection. It's the year three leap. It's what you've seen as top five transfer portal class, top 20 recruiting class. Dylan Raiola's back. We project being a lot better on special teams. Got to bring in a rugby-style punter. Who's going to win the kicking job? We now have three kickers there. Okay. Can one person emerge? Does one person, like, think about this world, where you have a short field goal kicker, a long field goal kicker, and then a kickoff specialist potentially. I don't know if that's what's going to happen, especially if we end up with the 105 roster limit. But I do believe we're going to be better on special teams. Some questions that have to be answered. I think offensively we're going to be better. Defensively, I would like to just maintain what we've done. Okay, a top 20 defense the past 2 years, which I'm curious to see how that unfolds. If we could just maintain, I'd be happy with that. With Rhule, 5-7 year one, correct? 7-6 last year, right? So technically under 500 is a combined win-loss, one game under 500. Again, that's not a shot. That's the numbers are what they are. Okay, 2 + 2 = 4, no matter how badly I may want it to equal 5 or whatever else. Okay, like Jake said, it's not a shot, but for me, I think there's projection in there, what Nebraska is going to do. And when I'm doing lists like this, I have a hard time projecting. I have to go off. I would probably do the last 3 years. There was a time when I would have done 4 or 5 years with the way teams change so much every year. I would do about the past 2 to 3 years. And if you do that, I'd even have to put Cignetti ahead of him, even though I think Nebraska will be better than Indiana next year. But that's me projecting. I thought Nebraska would beat Indiana last year. So when you're doing these things, I think Rhule gets the benefit of the doubt because of what he's done in the past, what he's done this offseason. I think there's a projection of optimism for this season for Nebraska, which I'm obviously a part of. Personally, I think Cignetti maybe could be ahead of him. Would you say we're 1-7 in our last 8 games versus Minnesota? And Rhule was a part of, what, 2 of those?
Yeah.
Okay. So he wasn't a part of all those. So PJ Fleck, as much as you may or may not be a fan of Row the Boat, et cetera, you know, I do respect what he's done. So I just thought it was interesting. Now, here's what I will say. I do think by the end of next football season, we may look at this list and be like, yeah, Rhule should be ahead of Cignetti. Because I do think Nebraska is going to be better than Indiana. If Nebraska goes into Minnesota, we have more talent than them. I don't want to say it's not close. It is a clear-cut talent advantage on our side. Athleticism, speed. It's not like it's varsity versus JV. I'm not going to say that. That would be ridiculous. What I'm saying is there is a decided talent advantage for Nebraska, but who's better at football? They've been better at football more often than us, too often in recent history, as we all unfortunately know, and I hope that changes. But if we go in and all of a sudden you beat Minnesota like you're capable of by 2 touchdowns, maybe this list changes. Illinois, can they be 5-1 in one-score games? I mean, they lost almost 50 receptions, over 1,000 receiving yards, and 14 receiving touchdowns last year with their 2 receivers who are no longer there. So can that makes a difference. Can Luke Altmyer, he looked not very good 2 years ago. He looked like a completely different quarterback last year. He looked like the 4-star highly recruited kid out of high school that he was. Can he do that again with new faces at wide receiver? Because those 2 guys were pretty good. So for me, I could look at this list at the end of the season and be like, yeah, that makes sense. Right now, unless you include projection, it's a little challenging for me. What do you think, Jake?
Yeah, that's what I was saying. I just don't know how you argue him or land him at number 5. And if it is projection, you know, then that's a different list, right? And that's kind of doing something different. So I would love, and that it's just kind of one of those things. You go back to some of these preseason rankings have Nebraska in the top 25. And I go around and I ask, you know, former players, and some of them say, I'd rather have them earn it. And that's kind of what I feel in this list. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want Matt Rhule to be a top 5 coach. I believe he can be a top 5 coach in the Big Ten. And I think that this is the year. This is the year to prove it. But I'd rather like go through it and then by the end of the year be like, wow, he made his way into the top 5, than being like, well, he was granted top 5 to begin with, and now we'll just kind of see where it goes. Not that it matters. It's not going to change anything. But it just kind of feels like it's being given without being earned quite yet.
I love that. And it's the same thing with these post-spring top 25 polls that you've seen. Like, I think J.D. Piquel and a lot of the other guys have us in the top 25 poll. That's great. I actually prefer Joel Klatt's top 25 for no other reason other than we're not in it. Obviously, I want us to be a top 25 team, but I want us to earn it. Like, we haven't done anything on the actual football field, wins and losses column wise, to earn it yet. Is there a reason to believe we can be there? Oh, absolutely. You look at the talent on this team, there's reason to believe you could be top 15. You look at recent history on the field. When's the last time we finished the season ranked? 2016? So for me, I'm with Jake. I want to earn it. I like seeing it, but I'm like, I've been saying all offseason, I got to see it on the field. I want to see it on the field. I get excited about potentially seeing it on the field. Not going to spend a ton of time on this. Don't need to. But I also saw another list, worst Big Ten hires of the past decade in the Big Ten. Coaching-wise, number 1 was Ryan Walters. Number 2, Mike Riley. Number 3, Jimmy Lake. Number 4, Mel Tucker. Number 5, Scott Frost. Number 6, Chris Ash. My immediate reaction was, we are the only school with 2. The top 6 is what I just read. We are the only school with 2 coaches in the top 6, so I didn't like that. I don't know that I would put Mike Riley as high as number 2. Beyond that, you know, I saw it. I thought I'd throw it out there. Do you have any thoughts on it real quick, Jake? And is there anything from the text line before we go to break?
Yeah, I saw that too. It's interesting. At least opens up the conversation of which was the worst hire, Scott Frost or Mike Riley, which you could have different arguments on both sides there. But I did want to go back to something real quick, because there was a good text off the text line. One, Husker P says Ferentz should be number 1. Nobody does more with less. BJ in Wichita says Minnesota has had almost twice as many players drafted than us since 2018. So some arguments there on behalf of some of our rivals. But back to Jeremy Lincoln was talking about a great interview there with Harrington. He says, I'm curious in college football history, more than eight teams had a legit shot at the title. To me, I was born in 1986. It's always been maybe eight teams. Programs have had it run since the early days. It's always been the same schools. There are more close games now than the 90s when we won 28 by 28 on average a game.
It's a fair point. I think you felt like maybe each conference was a little bit more equal. There wasn't such a separation from the SEC and what used to be the Pac-12. Now that doesn't even exist. I think there was a little bit more balance, at least you felt that way, between the conferences versus being so two conference top heavy. The upsets, I think we're going to see less and less of them. We're going to see teams lose more games because the actual schedules are more difficult because the conferences are harder. But as far as flat-out, big-time, jaw-dropping upsets, when he brought up the NCAA tournament, obviously basketball is a little bit different, all right? It's easier to win one particular game in basketball, baseball, than it is, per se, football, which is why one game matters more in football than some of the other sports out there. I just don't think you're going to see as many upsets. Like, I'll tell you right now, a team like Boise or Cincinnati, when they got in a few years ago, when Cincinnati was a G5 team, they had a better chance of making a national title game with four teams because they only had to win one game. Now they're going to have to win two, three, four games to play for a national title. Like, you're just not going to see it probably. Very likely at all. Plus, the rich keep getting richer. That's just the way it is. So, it's funny. 1998. Right, Tennessee won it all. They were undefeated. Number two was Florida State. Number three was, I believe, Ohio State had one loss. Florida State had one loss. I think that was the year Kansas State lost to A&M in the Big 12 championship game. I think number five was UCLA, who lost to Miami late in the season. Okay. I remember 1998. A&M barely lost to Florida State, who I just mentioned was number three. Actually beat number four Kansas State. I forget who their second loss was that year. They ended up playing Ohio State in the Sugar Bowl, and I think they lost by double digits, but it was within a touchdown until about 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. My point is, and Florida almost beat Tennessee in Knoxville that year. It was a late missed field goal, or a made field goal for Tennessee that helped them win, and they played Florida State and almost beat them. So my point is, I think A&M was seven, Florida was eight. And I just pointed out how A&M at seven, Florida at eight, really almost beat the number one team, the number three team. They actually did beat the number four team in Kansas State. That's really the last year in my mind, besides the season ago. A season ago, was obviously Ohio State was number eight in the country. I think of 2025, I think of 1998, where there was like, wow, there's like eight teams that are really close. Beyond that, it always tended to be really three, four, five teams for years. By the way, 2007, LSU had two losses when they won. And then I think Minnesota, we have to double check this. I think they won a national title in the 30s with two losses because there was a big gap from like the 1930s to 07 and then obviously 07 to last year, Ohio State having two losses and winning a national title is my point, which LSU did in 07. 07 was one of the craziest years ever. That could be another year you throw in there. A bunch of teams had a chance and LSU wasn't even projected to be in the title game. And then all of a sudden, all this stuff happens. They end up getting in and then they mollywop Ohio State, win the national title. Outside of 98, maybe 07, it's really three, four, five teams every year. But last year was interesting. The eight seed, and what was Notre Dame? The six seed, seven seed, playing for the national title. So when you think about how many years was it realistic, man, that more three or four teams, there wasn't a ton. For years, like I said, it was really Ohio State, Clemson, Georgia, Alabama. Every once in a while, Washington would hop up there. I think Oregon made the national title game a couple times in there, lost to Auburn, lost to Ohio State in the inaugural college football playoff. I think that was the year that Ohio State had their third string quarterback. They killed Wisconsin in the Big Ten title game. Then they beat Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. And then they ended up beating a pretty good Oregon team. And Marcus Mariota won the Heisman by a couple of touchdowns in that national title game. So there's been years, but the one good thing is I actually think there's going to be more years with 8 to 10 to 12 teams having a shot at the national title. But what you're going to get is less upsets along the way and more separation from the Big Ten, SEC, and everyone else. That all kind of makes sense, Jake?
Yeah, it does. I mean, but I agree with the point, too. That's why I kind of like to read that text, is that it generally has been that way. There's all this narrative, and we kind of get into this, oh, no, the rich are going to get richer and the powers are going to be the powers. That's how it's always been. You've always had And that's basically how it is in every sport. There are very few sports where you don't start the season or start the playoff thinking, ah, there's about five or six teams that could win this thing.
Yeah, I look at the NFL, like right now, well, probably Chiefs, Ravens, Bills, AFC. NFC, probably Lions, Eagles. Who else would you throw in there? I suppose the Commanders, but their roster top to bottom, although they've made some improvements this through free agency in the draft this offseason that exponentially have made them better. It's usually 6 to 8 teams, even in the NFL. In the NBA for a long time, it was, okay, whatever team LeBron is on in the East, because he was on Cleveland and Miami, is always whatever team LeBron is on, probably versus either Dallas, maybe the Spurs. Of course, that was kind of pre-LeBron, although they played a couple times in the finals, and really the Warriors. So you can make an argument. It's always been kind of similar that way. The one thing I would say is I sat down one time. This was about 5-10 years ago, and I actually went through, I believe, the first year that G5 teams pretty much started getting into major bowl games every year. I could be wrong, but I believe it was 2005 Utah, Alex Smith, Urban Meyer, and then they killed Pittsburgh, who won back when the Big East existed. But for about 10 years, those G5 teams won about 70% of the games against the Power 5 teams at the time in the major bowl games. Since about 10 years ago when the college football playoff era started and everything started to just kind of the rich get richer, it's gone exponentially down, all right? I think the one exception was Tulane USC a couple years ago. And I think that's become an anomaly, like Utah and Boise State. You know, a lot of these teams were actually more competitive. Now, I don't know if it's going to be that way going forward as much. All right, ladies and gentlemen, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Kristen Bell. And if you know my husband, Dax, then you also know he loves shopping for a car. Selling a car? Not so much.
We're really doing this, huh?
Thankfully, Carvana makes it easy. Answer a few questions, put in your VIN or license, and done. We sold ours in minutes this morning, and they'll come pick it up and pay us this afternoon.
Goodbye, Truckee.
Of course, we kept the favorite.
Hello, other Truckee.
Sell your car with Carvana today. Terms and conditions apply.